Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 11th, 2016. I'm finally getting my years correct. No more inadvertent reversion of 2015. Anyway, today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How you doing?
Great, great. Glad to have you with us out here, and I'm glad that we're back on the air together. So, D.R., we had a projection for 2016 show a couple weeks ago. We talked about how one of the items to watch this coming year would be the debate about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. And we also said, you know, get ready for some unexpected twists and turns. And, of course, such a thing has happened, right? So tell me, DR, what was the jack-in-the-box? What horror movie reference do you have where something jumps out of a box, a zombie? Like, what happened to Keystone XL?
Sort of like Friday the 13th, basically. Yeah. You know, the hand popping out of the grave. Well, actually, I think that was Carrie, but I've got my horror movie references a bit screwed up. But in any event, TransCanada, the parent company of the Keystone XL pipeline, announced a few days ago that it would seek an estimated $15 billion in damages over the Obama administration's veto of the Keystone XL pipeline. They filed two legal challenges, one a challenge through an arbitration division of the North American Free Trade Agreement, and another a federal lawsuit in U.S. District Court claiming that Obama did not have the legal constitutional authority to say no KXL, basically. And this has been highly controversial because for all the debates about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the investor-state dispute settlement that would allow private entities to basically overturn decisions made in the executive or legislative branch, this is a case where TransCanada is using a similar provision in the North American Free Trade Agreement to try to launch a legal challenge to this case. Now, there have been a number of legal experts to say that they cannot get Obama to reverse his veto of the Keystone XL pipeline, but what they're trying to do is that they're basically going to cite their own version of loss and damage based on the expected profits they expected to make if Obama had said yes.
The $15 billion they think they would have made if Obama had said yes. Right.
Exactly, and they want that money essentially. It remains to be seen if they'll ever get it.
Well, I think that you're right. This is the nightmare on TPP Street come true, right? We have talked many times about the possibility that corporations would sue the United States for environmental laws or actions in this kangaroo court that's held someplace under TPP rules. And here it is, exactly the situation that we have been talking about, whereas Keystone, the TransCanada got rejected, and now they're feeling a little hurt and sniffly, and they want $15 billion under NAFTA. So it crystallizes all of the risk of the TPP agreement, doesn't it? I mean, it just makes it clear as day that these guys are going to use that investor-state dispute settlement mechanism that's built into all these treaties.
And not only that, it does create a problem in terms of all the people who tried to defend NAFTA as a good deal. You may remember that famous debate 23 years ago on CNN between Al Gore and Ross Perot about the alleged merits of NAFTA. And you have to wonder, you know, if the people who back then were championing NAFTA, if they feel a bit differently about it now, because the idea that NAFTA could be used as a vehicle to allow TransCanada to pull off a $15 billion heist against the United States Treasury. I mean, something tells me that the people who are cheerleading NAFTA might be having second thoughts now.
Well, so interesting you mentioned the 1990s and NAFTA. From what I've read, the intent of this investor-state dispute settlement system was for corporations to have some recourse if they were doing business in a country that did not have a well-established legal system. Right. So if you're doing trying to drill, well, let's say trying to drill for oil in Yemen, where there is no court system, and somebody comes in and does harm to your investment, then you have some mechanism to try and get your money back. But that is a far cry from suing the United States. I mean, it's a distortion of the original intent for these guys to think that they can sue the United States over something.
And now I know there have been conflicting reports about, as to whether or not these previous challenges under NAFTA's version of the ISDS, have been successful. But obviously, there's a first time for everything, and if TransCanada is successful doing what they want to do, that would have a horrible, horrible precedent.
Well,
And
in the article, there's an article we'll put a link to in Inside Climate News, and basically talking about this, but it does give several examples. See, I tried to circle them. Let's see, where we might have lost it now. But anyway, there's Chevron has done it, in, so specifically in the oil and gas region, Chevron has done it. I think in Canada, there's a company called Metalclad that did it again. And what they do is, even if they don't win, they scare the bejesus out of a country, right? So if you have some small country, and this is what I was reading somewhere about cigarettes. So it was the John Oliver piece, right? No,
Yeah,
it was
so
made.
about Australia's efforts to try to curb smoking, and how I believe it was Philip Morris or what they call Altria now basically used NAFTA to challenge that.
But if I'm
And
if memory serves, they also did it to someplace like Ecuador, Uruguay, which just doesn't have the money to keep up with this corporation, and so they are forced to roll over. So it's the intimidation inherent in the ability to sue these guys that is the worst thing, right? Even if they don't, because all these articles say, oh, well, they can't reverse Obama, that TransCanada, if it wins, cannot reverse Obama's decision, but they can get their money back, in quotation marks, which, of course, they never had in the first place. But I don't know, a deep distortion of the way this stuff ought to work.
You know, it's funny. We have all this conversation for years in this country about the problems of bullying and the problems posed to bullying. What do you do when you have this sort of legalized bullying on an international scale?
Right.
How do you run an anti-bully campaign in this sort of playground? You
Yeah.
know what I mean?
I
It's
mean,
pretty hard to do.
I guess we've all read Lord of the Flies, right? That's what we're in the middle of. Well, so then there's another article. I guess it was in Grist, and it sort of clearly comes out of the 350 organization, but basically saying, okay, this was a gift to the climate movement from TransCanada because it galvanizes and it clarifies completely the issue with the TPP. It galvanizes people who have spent the last 3 or 4 years opposed to the Keystone XL pipeline. So it's like, politically speaking, the worst thing for TransCanada to do, and perhaps the best thing for the climate movement, to have a clear-cut, heinous villain walking around, right?
It'll definitely ramp up the opposition to the TPP, and there's already been discussions about whether or not Congress will even take up the TPP prior to the conclusion of the 2016 presidential election. So this may be the sort of the disease that kills the whole body of the TPP, if you will.
Yeah, if we, I mean, if climate hawks can, well, of course, McConnell in the Senate is congenitally unable to say yes to Obama, even when it's in his own interest. So they're going to push this. The likelihood, I think you're right, they're going to push the whole thing off until after the election, into the next year. Right? But that gives us, in quotation marks, as climate hawks, plenty of time to make the case that this is a disastrous deal to begin with, right?
Exactly. That it's just one of those things that may well cause the TPP to be DOA in 2016.
Well, I guess the other thing to keep in mind here is the, again, with the, so there's the ISDS, investor state dispute, right, in the TPP, but there's also the whole question of the Paris Agreement, right? And so now we've written the TPP. There's a very similar thing in process for to be made with Europe. I'm not exactly sure of the acronym, right? There's these two trade deals. The U.S. Congress has explicitly said those trade deals cannot be used to address climate change, and there's nowhere in either of those things is carbon dioxide mentioned, Right, green, it's they're living on a different planet, and so the implication, the coordination between the Paris Agreement and these massive trade agreements, which are at the heart of carbon consumption to begin with, and they have nothing there. I mean, what do you think is gonna, how is it going to play between the TPP and the Paris Agreement?
There's a great piece in the Daily Climate discussing the risks of the TPP and also another similar deal that's in the works called the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, and basically making the point that both of these deals can essentially undo the Paris deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to wonder, you know, is there going to be more activism in other countries that are going to be, you know, covered under these deals to basically stop at these deals because they essentially, you know, sabotage the Paris deal.
Right.
It's hard to deal with, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess you're right. It's interesting. This second deal, which I haven't even got the acronym for, you call it the North Atlantic Trade and the NATIPP or something.
It's a Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partner, TATIP.
TATIP, okay. I mean, that in Europe, it seems to me there is a much more highly developed civil society that is fully cognizant of these risks, right? Mm-hmm. So now you're going to have probably people across Germany, France, and England opposing this TATIP, the new acronym for the week, new vocabulary word, the
exactly.
Atlantic version of the TPP, and maybe that will reflect back on the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well. Is it just to point highlight the incompatible nature of these treaties with climate progress, right?
Exactly. Between the TPP and the TATIP, you almost have to deal with the. You almost have to take a PILL to basically deal with all the headaches caused by it.
Well, I was trying to think of a name for this episode we hope to put up, and all I can think is NAFTAKXLTPP as the unpronounceable acronym, right?
That's alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup. Well, I tell you, DR, it is an exciting and interesting time. I think anyone who has listened to the show or is listening now should recognize that this Trans Canada action is crystallizes the insanity of what's going on in our world, and we need to start figuring out some way to make a change here, right?
Exactly. It's you know these deals are potentially dealing death if you think about it.
So, DR, we'll have links of these stories because this is not. I mean, you're not going to hear about this on the nightly news, right? So we'll put up some links to people can read about what's going on here. It is deep, dark, but really important. You can find those links on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.net/blog. So our blog is a subpage of the massclimateaction.net website. So you can go search there, and all the blogs typically have a widget that goes to SoundCloud. You can play it from there. You can also find us on Facebook. We'll put up a link to the blog on Facebook. That's at /massclimateaction. Please share us, like us. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or any of a number of other. If there's a particular one you want to hear us on, let us know. We'll try and get ourselves listed there. You can find us, of course, on iTunes. And as I say, if you search for Massachusetts Climate Action, we are unique, if you know what I mean. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.